Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org.
Labor Day is the unofficial kickoff to the campaign season. I'm Maylilly Lee. Thanks for joining us. On this edition of Virginia Conversations, we introduce you to the candidates hoping to become our next governor, Republican Ken Cuccinelli, Democrat Terry McAuliffe, and Libertarian Robert Sarvis. We'll be taking your calls later in the program, but now we start with Democratic candidate. Mr. McAuliffe, welcome to Virginia Conversations. I'm going to do us both a favor, as interesting as it would be to talk about some of the mudslinging between you and your opponent. I'd actually like to hear about your vision for Virginia. Let's start with education. Mm-hmm. You're the father of five.
That's right.
And at a recent forum in Richmond, you said that you would like to see Virginia get rid of its SOL, Standards of Learning. Why so?
Well, I think we have to get rid of them in their present form. They don't work for parents. They don't work for teachers. And they're clearly not working for students. The idea of this high-stakes, multiple-choice test at the end of the year is forcing teachers to teach to tests. It's having our children learn memorization, which there's nothing wrong with that. But we've got to have our children be thinking creatively, cognitively. And why do we possibly give the test at the end of the year and generally with 2 to 3 weeks left at the end of the year so the students don't have anything to do? If we really want to help the students – earlier in the year, maybe short essays, maybe a couple of them through the year. We want to be able to gauge our students' progress, and we want to be making sure that we're preparing our students for those 21st century jobs. The tests we have today doesn't help anybody, and we need to abolish them in their present form. We need to restructure them and get our children ready for a 21st century economy, moving science, technology, engineering, move them up earlier, get the best teachers. But the other big issue on teachers, when you take average Virginia pay and compare that to average teacher pay, we rank 50th out of 50 states, last. We should never be last in anything. We need accountability with teachers, but goodness, let's pay our teachers what they're worth. We want to retain the best and brightest and recruit them. Big issues the next governor has to face.
What about community colleges in Virginia? Do you think we underutilize them?
Yes, and this is, you know, I mean, I get excited when I talk about community colleges. You probably know I've been to 22 of the 23. I'll be the first, I think, candidate or governor to go to all 23. If we're going to grow a new economy and diversify our economy to bring in new businesses, cybersecurity, nano, biolife sciences, big data, analytics, all the new things we talk about. If someone's going to bring an advanced manufacturing facility to Virginia, first place they go to the community colleges. They are our real engines for workforce development. Now, in 2008, the state's contribution to community colleges per student was $4,400. We've dropped that today to $2,500. So it used to be affordable option for so many of our children is no longer an affordable option. So we need to invest more in those community colleges. They are our real workforce development engines. 3 out of 5 of our higher ed students goes to a community college. There's within a community college, within an hour's drive of every Virginia resident. Spectacular.
Moving into healthcare, there's a multi-billion dollar Medicaid package on the line. The federal government reportedly wants to offer Virginia over $20 billion in funding over 7 years to expand Medicaid coverage in the state. Ken Cuccinelli has already said he doesn't think it's a good idea. What about you? Would you accept the funding?
All in. One of the first things I'd like to get done. I've said as governor, please don't send a budget to me to sign that doesn't have the Medicaid expansion. Number one, 400,000 Virginians will get access to quality life-saving care. Number two, we will bring $21 billion. Remember, this is our money. It's going to be paid into the federal government. It's now the law of the land. There's nothing can be done about that. So why would we ship our money to Washington and not want to bring that back to roll through our economy, turbocharge our economy, doctors, nurses, home health care providers? And the other big issue which people have to understand, if we don't take the Medicaid expansion, our hospitals, one study I recently showed, $190 million of lost revenue of cost because the federal DSH payments, disproportionate share of indigent person goes to a hospital and they get reimbursed now by the federal government. Over the next couple of years, they're going to phase that out. So there's a cost to us. We can create 33,000 new jobs. The federal government pays 100% for 3 years, 90% every year thereafter. It's the right thing to do socially, morally, fiscally. bipartisan. Lieutenant Governor Bowling 100% supports it. The Virginia Chamber of Commerce 100% supports it. It is fiscally irresponsible for Ken Cuccinelli, and so, I think socially irresponsible, morally irresponsible, not to take that money and help so many Virginia residents.
I heard you say in a mental health forum how the expansion could help provide services in areas of mental health throughout Virginia. However, let's just take that off the table for a minute. Let's say that never comes to fruition. How, as governor, would you want to improve services in mental health to Virginia?
Well, I'd love to – you know, we all want to do what we need to do on the mental health service. We have a very good mental health delivery system today in Virginia. What's lacking are resources. We need more personnel. We have so many of our students today that in depression, suicidal thoughts. We need to make sure that we have the adequate personnel in our schools earlier and then work with our, you know, community service boards to make sure that if we diagnose a problem that it immediately gets taken care of instead of waiting 3-4 months. Who knows what could happen? We need to make sure we have long-term stabilization units. We need to be training our police. Today, many of our jails get filled up with those individuals who have a mental illness and should not be in jail. And clearly the personnel who work in that jail, they're not trained on mental illness issues. So it all takes money to do it. You know, I'm the most optimistic person in the world. But without that Medicaid expansion money, which allows us to free up about $500 million from the general fund, you know, I'm not going to be one of these people in politics who makes promises they can't honor. And I can tell you this clearly. My opponent, who has promised a $1.4 billion tax cut without saying how he paid for it, you and I know that's going to come right out of education, public safety, and health. That Medicaid expansion is the single biggest issue as we head into this year's election. And for that governor next year, has to make that critical decision early on. I will not stand by and forfeit our Virginia taxpayer money and allow it to go right now to 29 other states.
How do you counter the argument of those like Ken Cuccinelli who say, look, if we accept that money, we're going to end up owing a lot more in the long run. It's going to cost Virginia money to take the money.
He's just plain wrong. Number one, when you walk through the economics as I just went through and the new jobs being created. But let's hypothetically say 2-3 years down the road, the federal government reneges on their commitment. If that happens as governor, you have to do the only reasonable thing. You have to call the General Assembly back in, say the federal government broke their part of the promise. We have to end ours as well. If that happens, it happens. But to go through this process and you put that out there as some reason why we shouldn't do it, meanwhile leaving 400,000 Virginians without quality life-saving care, and I believe the statistic I saw, 80,000 of those individuals, there's an issue of mental health issue with involved in that. My goodness, we can't do that in Virginia. We have to do what we need to do at the Commonwealth to be helping our citizenry, not hurting them.
On your website, the number one topic on your list of issues is jobs and the economy. Tell us about your plans to stimulate growth in Virginia.
And as I say, big challenges. Stimulus is over. $500 billion baked into the Department of Defense cuts. Sequestration here for the year. And I think most people will likely say, Mayor, that next year, that on September 30, they're going to vote to take it in for another year. That's going to have a dramatic impact on Virginia. We're the number one recipient of DOD dollars. So how do you diversify the economy? How do you grow it? That's why I always get excited when you hear me talk about we ought to be the leaders in cybersecurity and the new biolife sciences and what the work's being done at Hampton Roads on big data and modeling. These are the jobs. So as it relates to jobs, it's all those big issues I talked about. Number one, transportation. You can't grow an economy. As you know, 5 years ago, we were rated the best state in the country to do business. 2 years ago, we dropped to third. And then in the last 2 weeks, we dropped to fifth. Primarily, big piece of that was transportation. Ken Cuccinelli doesn't believe in the transportation fund, and he tried to stop his own incumbent Republican governor. This is the first time in 27 years we have some money to fix roads. In Northern Virginia, we are stuck in traffic 70 hours a year. We waste $1 billion. In Hampton Roads, it's 43 hours a year, $700 million wasted. That's why I talk about opening up Route 58 the whole way from the port all the way across the state, four lane it the whole way so that we can open up that port, put advanced manufacturing distribution centers all in those rural communities. Let's get trucks as many as we can off 81 to make it safer. You can't grow an economy unless you fix it. The other big issue in rural communities, they need help more than anyone else. They've lost textile. They've lost furniture, tobacco. But you can't grow those economies unless they have access to broadband and cellular services. There's no business that's going to move to these communities if their employees are Management can't get on a cell phone and make a call. But these are the challenges that get me excited. This is why I'm running for governor, to help people.
Let's talk about that transportation package the McDonnell administration pushed through, a compromise transportation funding bill. As you mentioned, Cuccinelli backed off from supporting it. You criticized Cuccinelli, which was in a roundabout way very bipartisan of you. So what are your plans to address transportation gridlock?
Well, now we'll have about $6 billion to begin the process to do what we need to do. I support public-private partnerships, but they got to be done in a smart way. I'd come out against the Midtown Tunnel deal because, you know, we negotiated that when the state didn't have any money at all. And it was a deal that, you know, showed a 13% return. That's a pretty high return. But when you have no leveraging and no negotiating room, you know, so let's go back. I look for deals that are win-win. It has to be good for everybody. But unlocking transportation in Northern Virginia, dealing with what we have to do at Hampton Roads, because I worry, and one of my biggest concerns as governor is going to be if some type of natural disaster or hurricane or something happened in the whole Tidewater region, how do you get those folks out in a timely fashion to keep everybody safe? It's a big issue. You go to Norfolk today, if it's been raining for 2 or 3 days, there's roads that are closed. The sea level, contrary to my opponent who doesn't believe in that humans contribute to climate change and actually sued the University of Virginia, I do believe. I mean, there's issues that relate to that. So on transportation, passenger rail, I fully support the Metro. My opponent, the Silver Line, which is our new line that will go to our international airport, open up Dulles Airport, and then stops in Loudoun County, open up economic development. He actually said he would kill it after it was halfway completed. So lack of compromise, the idea you would stop construction on a project halfway built, that's just political, you know, social ideological demagoguery, and to the point that it doesn't help us grow and do what we need to do. We got to get off of this. And listen, it's not only that, but I mean, I've spoken about the social ideological agenda, the attacks on the Women's Health Center, the idea of pushing personhood bill to outlaw most forms of contraception, including the pill. The attacks he's laid on gay Virginians and calling them selfless and soulless. You know, we got to get off of that kind of – I want to be a uniter, bringing everybody in. You can't grow an economy when you're putting walls up around Virginia.
All right. Let's talk about this. What happened to the Defense of Marriage Act is going to play a big role in this race. DOMA went down, and that paved the way for gay marriages. What was your reaction that day that the decision was announced? And do you think Virginia will remain behind, like many states – in acknowledging gay marriage?
Well, and listen, we have to understand the political realities in Virginia. There's 32 Democrats in the House of Delegates. As you know, when I got in the race for governor, I supported marriage equality. And listen, citizens in Virginia, people of, you know, goodwill and good intentions can differ on this issue. And in fact, my wife Dorothy and I came around to it. And what really impacted us is the whole issue about, you know, don't ask, don't tell. And the idea that we could send men and women all over the world to fight for our country and they come back and they don't have equal rights is just fundamentally, I thought, was wrong. So I've supported marriage equality. Everybody ought to be treated equally. I would do as Governor Kaine did, executive order number one, no discrimination at all in the state workplace. As you know, my opponent, one of the first acts he did was to send a letter to every college and university to remove any protections of discrimination based on sexual orientation. And your listeners should understand there's consequences to these actions. When he did that, we were in the final throes of Northrop Grumman moving their corporate headquarters to Northern Virginia, 300 very high-paid jobs. When that happened, that put the brakes on the deal and totally almost scuttled the deal. Governor McDonnell himself had to interject himself to save that deal. Because in fairness, when you're trying to have employees move, why do you want to go to a state where your attorney general is saying those kinds of things? Why are we removing protections? We need protections to make sure that we're open, fair, we treat people. You know, I've grown up my whole life. I'm a big believer and I've been a strong supporter of my life of the Democratic Party. As a kid who did start his first business at 14 to help pay for college, I want everybody to have the same opportunities that Terry McAuliffe had as a kid. I want to put my hand out and help that person up that rung of the ladder. That makes me feel good, and it's the right thing to do, and that's what you want in your next governor. I won't tolerate any of these issues that we've seen in Virginia over the last couple years that in fairness have made us a bit of a laughingstock on national television, these shows. I trust women to make their own decisions about their own personal health issues.
In the wake of the ethics issue dogging Governor McDonnell, do you think Virginia needs stronger ethics laws governing office holders?
Absolutely. I think it's disgraceful what we have today. So I've proposed, one, a commission that deals with these. You know, they shouldn't be policing themselves. We should have an independent commission to look at ethics violations. But number two, and most importantly, I have proposed a $100 gift ban on any state elected official. $100, that's it. And I'll propose that right off the bat as soon as I get elected governor. And even if they don't pass it through the General Assembly, I will do executive order number two right behind what I did and make sure that there's no discrimination, that it will apply to myself and my family. As governor, I will make a commitment to every one of your listeners that I will accept no gifts over $100.
Ken Cuccinelli has released 8 years of income tax returns. You have not.
Mm-hmm.
But will you at some point?
I've gone beyond what is required of me. I have released my – as Governor Warner, Governor Kane, and Governor McDonnell, I've gone beyond what has been asked to me. I put out the summaries of my taxes. Previous governors have never done that. And I've released my statement of economic interest with all the holdings – different holdings that I have. And this was a gimmick by Ken Cuccinelli when he got in trouble with the Star Scientific issues. I mean, he wants to ask me about disclosures. He is the attorney general. And he should have been suing Johnny Williams or Star Scientific. They owed the state $1.7 million. For almost two years, he let the case languish. He wasn't taking them to court. You know what? Johnny Williams was taking him to New York City. He was getting free trips to New York. He, as you know, went down to a Smith Resort home, Smith Mountain Lake Resort home. He took a $1,500 turkey dinner. I tell you, that's a lot of turkey. And he didn't disclose any of that. And when things started to get hot with all the investigations, all of a sudden he decided to disclose.
Right. And this question about the tax returns isn't mm-hmm. so much about the law, but about running for office, mm-hmm. about showing voters where your income comes from and where it's invested. So why not reveal the 8 years?
Well, I mean, I've done, as I say, I've gone beyond what everybody else has done. Governor Warner, Governor Kane, and Governor McDonald, I've gone up and beyond what was required of me. No one has disclosed what I have disclosed, and I've put the summary of all my taxes out, and I've listed every holding that I own.
Terry McAuliffe, applying for the job
Thank you.
Of governor of Virginia, and as we round out, any final words?
No, the last thing I'll say, if you believe in the things that I talked about here, it's important that you do vote. Historically, I understand how tough this is. I think I have to break a 37-year trend. Whoever wins the White House, the other party wins the governor's mansion. If people don't come out and say, oh, I voted last year in the presidential election, I don't need to come out, well, we're not going to win. I get that. This is a hard deal. The Tea Party's pretty excited about this election. They're going to vote. I need folks who believe in the things that I talked about on transportation reform, SOL reform, community colleges, the Medicaid expansion. There are probably the starkest differences you've ever had between two candidates running for governor. If the things I talked about you believe in, then please vote on November 5th.
You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. For transparency, we do want to acknowledge that the Virginia Education Association has endorsed Terry McAuliffe, and that organization is an underwriter of this program. Stay with us. Our interview with Republican candidate Ken Cuccinelli is next. Today, we're introducing you to the men running for governor of Virginia. We talked with Democrat Terry McAuliffe, now Republican Ken Cuccinelli. Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli, welcome to Virginia Conversations.
Good to be with you.
When Republican Jerry Kilgore was attorney general, he was known for his stance against illegal immigration. As AG, Republican Jim Gilmore helped reform the juvenile justice system. What is your proudest accomplishment as Attorney General?
Well, I probably have a couple. One is the progress we've made exonerating wrongfully convicted felons. Another is starting our efforts against human trafficking from scratch, which Virginia didn't have before we started, and now we've been doing superb work. And just continuing the work that I've done in the mental health area which is really a supporting role as Attorney General. But we have had some things where we've stepped out on our own.
You know, back when George Allen ran for governor, he was on the platform of parole abolition. Other Republicans carved out their reputations by being tough on crime. There seems to be a departure with you. You've said you'd like to revisit some of the harsher sentences for minor offenses and other adjustments to prison terms. Why this separation from tougher sentencing?
Well, it isn't that I'm anything short of tough on crime, but, you know, there's only so much in the way of prison beds to go around, and who do we want to put in prison? You know, I want to put child molesters and sex offenders in prison, and that they're the people I want to keep off the streets for a long time. And if we're filling those prisons with lower level criminals, then we don't get that opportunity, just as a matter of cost. So we periodically we just need to circle back to our whole criminal justice system and prioritize who we want to spend the money protecting ourselves from. And that's what I think is appropriate to do every few years or so. And I don't mean every 2 years, but every 5 or 10 years. And I would be entirely supportive of that. And I don't think there's anything inconsistent between that and being tough on crime. But you do have to be particular. We can't just do everything we want to do. That's the nature of having to make prioritization choices.
So the budget is a big driver in this.
Sure it is. Absolutely.
We seem to be swept up in scandals this election, the situation with the governor's former chef and the CEO of Star Scientific. Then there's the investigation of the actions of an attorney in your office. And pile on top of that questions about Mr. McAuliffe's business, questions around why he's not making public 8 years of tax returns as you have. It has to undermine the public's trust. How do you repair that?
Well, I called for a special session to address some of these ethics issues. Governor didn't agree with me. I think that's unfortunate. I think that an aggressive stance to try and restore the trust of the people of Virginia is very appropriate, and time is your enemy in that. I mean, the longer things linger, the more difficult it is to repair. I do think there's pretty substantial differences in here where, and you noted, I've put out 8 years of my tax returns, and I've taken affirmative action when I've made mistakes, and no one else went and found my mistakes. I went and found them. And my opponent, as you noted, won't answer questions, won't put things on the record. There's an awful lot of hiding going on, all while there's an SEC investigation of GreenTech, his company, while he was chairman. And people who go to the voting booth on November 5th in just over 70 days are going to have one candidate, Terry McAuliffe, under federal investigation. And that's never happened before. So I think there's a lot for us to do in this area. I'm committed to doing it. I'd have rather done it in August than wait till January to get to work.
You told reporters that Star Scientific CEO Johnny Williams didn't give you the kind of gifts that can be returned, about $18,000 yeah. worth. So you haven't returned them. And you have said there are just some bells you can't unring. My question here is, couldn't you determine the value of a meal or a trip or a private jet trip and pay the benefactor back?
What we've done is identify all of these to folks and obviously report them. And then I took the extraordinary step of handing my own matter over to a Democrat Kamal's attorney to review, and he cleared me. So I think that's what really matters in this case. And the fact that, some of this stuff was out of the blue, like a $6,000 box of these little food supplements. Well, then what do I do with that? I just gave them away. So that's not, I don't think that's what people normally think of when they think of this stuff. And I think that the real focus ought to be on solving the problem, which is why I called for a special session and have supported a variety of the proposals that have been put out there for things like an independent ethics commission, things like gift caps and bans and those kinds of efforts that I think people in Virginia, just in my travels around the state, would like to see.
And drawing that line, this is $18,000 worth. In McDonald's case, it's over $100,000 worth. His decision was to return the monies. Yours wasn't. Could you again delineate why the difference?
Well, of course, I didn't get any money. I didn't get any loans. I didn't get any stuff. I didn't get watches and clothes. That's what they returned. It's because it's what they got. I'm not in that category.
Okay.
In fact, the governor's state investigation was begun by me in his gift situation. And, you know, so we've performed our role here as Attorney General dutifully, and we're in a totally different situation. And then when you look at my opponent, I mean, this is the guy who sold off the Lincoln bedroom, who sold seats on Air Force One during the Clinton administration, and gave a over $1 million gift loan to the President of the United States and his wife so they could buy a house in New York and she could run for the U.S. Senate. It's really an amazing comparison. And then with his what appear to be very questionable business practices with green tech, which is why the SEC is investigating it, that's still lingering, and he refuses to answer questions. Whereas I held a press conference to put all of my mistakes on the table. That's an incredible difference here in my commitment to integrity and to owning up to my own mistakes and to his complete lack of it.
Another line of demarcation was during the transportation package review. You separated from your own party person. You said the McDonnell package was something that you wouldn't sign on for. Could you explain why the departure?
Well, because I thought it was bad policy. If it was good policy, I would have signed on to it, regardless of whose it was.
Even McAuliffe liked it. Even your Democratic opponent liked it.
Oh, you and I both know he didn't even read it. You know, and Terry was taking credit for getting it passed. Again, more of his self-puffery going way beyond anything other than just merely he hoped it would pass. When it did get through the General Assembly, it was thoroughly unconstitutional. And my office went to work to clean it up and get it within the boundaries of the state constitution. You may remember a bill from 2007, the Transportation Compromise bill that year. I voted for that bill when I was in the state Senate. And then Tim Kaine amended it and made it unconstitutional. And the Virginia Supreme Court found it unconstitutional by a 7-0 vote. And I think that memory encouraged people to adopt our suggestions in between the General Assembly session and the veto session, so that the bill could at least be constitutional. We should all be able to agree that that ought to be the baseline. We ought not be passing bills into law that aren't constitutional. And we're the ones who did the work to get it inside the Constitution. Now, going forward, the question is, who's really going to be able to implement it frugally? Who's going to get the most transportation for every dollar? Well, I know how VDOT works, and Terry McAuliffe has no idea. He also has an extraordinary relationship over the years with unions, and he continues to refuse to step up and say that he would resist project labor agreements and other union-guaranteed contracts, which cost us millions and millions of dollars. In the most recent example in Northern Virginia, they had priced out a project with guaranteed union contracts, and the governor made them rebid it, and we saved $300 million. $300 million. That's a lot of road miles. It's a lot of potholes filled. And going forward, there's no question I'll get more transportation out of our transportation dollars than Terry McAuliffe ever will.
Let's put another big package on the table, Medicaid. You and Mr. McAuliffe disagree on Medicaid. At this point, you appear to be not in favor of Medicaid expansion for the Commonwealth. Why is that?
Well, first of all, you are correct. At this stage, I'm not in favor of the Medicaid expansion, and it would take getting a great deal of control over our own Medicaid program to do that. And there are a number of reasons. One, Terry hasn't said where the $200 million or so of taxes are coming from when this is fully phased in. Two, nobody has said where the doctors and nurses are coming from. As you well know, we're already struggling in many parts of Virginia geographically and in many professional areas, for instance, mental health, to have enough providers for the people we're trying to care for without expanding that universe by 40%. And you know, I visited a free clinic last week over in Goochland, and they have three physicians over there, and one of them takes Medicaid. He's already slammed, completely full. there's really nowhere for those new people to go. And so what ends up happening is everybody waits longer. So we have this system where the federal government hasn't been keeping their promises. Just last month, in the last month alone, we found two, call them breaches of the law, call them what you want, where the president got rid of the employer mandate for a year just by fiat, and that they're not going to check to determine who qualifies for the subsidized health insurance that's supposed to be available October 1st. And this is a healthcare fraud disaster in the making. This is a real train wreck. As the Democrat U.S. Senator who put the bill in, the federal healthcare bill in, said himself that this is a train wreck, and he's absolutely right. I think it's why he's not running for re-election next year, is because he's embarrassed of what he's done to our healthcare system.
There are a lot of people who feel that we as Virginians pay into the system anyway. So the other states might get to benefit from our taxpayer dollars down the road while we bypass the dollars that are offered to us.
Is that a question?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that there are people who feel that way. I would note that our federal government is bankrupt and that once we get into the Medicaid expansion, we're stuck in. There's no getting out at that point without their permission as a practical matter. And even if we had their permission, putting 400,000 new people on our health care welfare program, Medicaid, and then expecting if things don't go well to be able to back out of that is inconsistent with the history of this country. I'm not aware of that ever happening in any state in America. And so this is a really critical decision about whether to get in now or ever or not. And with a system that is falling apart as we watch it, before it's even supposed to come online, I think it is unwise to get into a system like that deeper. We have a lot of work we need to do in the Medicaid system we've got to make it work better, and that's what I'm focused on doing.
Now, you're an enigma. As a Republican, you've earned a reputation as an advocate for the mentally ill and as a staunch advocate against sexual assault. Not your standard Republican fare. Where does that passion come from, Mr. Cuccinelli?
Well, one of the differences in my race is all of my work in the community, whether it's preventing sexual assault, juvenile delinquency prevention, working with the homeless or with veterans, or the one that I've spent the most time on in my life, as you know, is working with people suffering from mental illness. And that began for me as community assistance, as I knew there was a need for help in this area, and I started working in this area. And it's just one of those things that took hold of my heart and has been a passion for me ever since. And whether it's helping people one at a time, which is mostly what get to do out in the community, or whether when I later on got elected to the state Senate was working to try to improve our policies to help people across Virginia who are suffering from mental illness and their families. This has been a real passion for me. And, my opponent hasn't done anything in the community in Virginia. I mean, he just decided in 2008 he wanted to run for governor. And I've been working to try in the community to help the mentally ill, people suffering from mental illness. I've been working in the policy arena as a state senator to do it. Certainly I've been working as attorney general when we got a significant batch of funds from some health care fraud prosecution that we'd done. The first grants we put out there for the money were to law enforcement to better train them to deal with people suffering from mental illness, to keep them safer, to keep people suffering from mental illness in Virginia safer, and to keep them out of our criminal justice system where they really don't belong.
Here's one that keeps coming up. DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, was stricken down by the Supreme Court, making way for gay marriage. Public opinion has tipped in favor of gay marriage. Even some Republicans have shifted with their gay relatives paving the way. I'm curious how you would handle the issue of gay marriage or even of sodomy in Virginia if you learned one of your family members were gay.
You love your family members regardless, and that wouldn't change regardless of my policy views, period. I mean, it goes no farther than that.
I know you have to work hard to reach the voters in the middle, the so-called swing voters. What would you say to voters who don't agree with you on social issues to convince them to cast their vote for you?
Well, you know, it's funny. My opponent gets up and says, Cuccinelli just talks about this, and he's the only one talking about it. I answer your questions, but that's it. This is not the focus of our campaign. The focus of my campaign is limiting government to allow job creation to take place faster in the private sector. I've put forward a jobs plan that's been rated as creating over 50,000 new jobs beyond where we are in Virginia today, and my opponent hasn't put forward a plan that's capable of being rated. He just talks about, hey, we'll do incentives and we'll do this. He's basically talking about bribing businesses to come to Virginia. I think we ought to put policies in place that let the people out in the private sector decide where to invest the dollars to grow those jobs, because they do a better job of it than their government does.
To that end,
and if you look at my opponent's last couple, I mean, he's got a string of picking losers here. So to think that suddenly he's going to become governor and do better with your tax money strikes me as defying his past performance.
In the news, two Virginia Republican congressmen are not endorsing your running mate, Lieutenant Governor candidate E.W. Jackson. Representatives Scott Ridgel and Randy Forbes say they're exercising, quote, passive distancing. Do you believe Jackson's stand on certain social issues would hurt your campaign?
Oh, I don't know whether it will or not. I mean, right after he got nominated, people were tossing him around quite a bit. Things have calmed down since then, and I think people will take him as he is. He's getting around Virginia, introducing himself. I don't think ultimately that because we're elected independently, I think that, hopefully people who come out for all of us will support each other. But, you'd never get the same votes. In 2009, Governor McDonald got 59%. I got 58%. The Lieutenant Governor got 57%. You know, things move around a bit, and we'll see how they play out on November 5th. So,
Attorney General,
good to be with you. I appreciate it.
Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli, great to have you with us today.
Good to talk to you. Thank you.
You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. Again, for transparency, we do want to acknowledge that the Virginia Education Association has endorsed Terry McAuliffe, and that organization is an underwriter of this program. We're back with more on the race for governor in just a moment, and we will be talking with the Libertarian candidate for governor, Robert Sarvis. Stay with us.
Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org. And by listeners of this Virginia Public Radio member station. Listeners can hear this program again or access other Virginia Public Radio news content at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.
This reminder that past editions of Virginia Conversations can be heard at virginiapublicradio.org. To find out about upcoming topics and comment on past shows, on Facebook, just search for Virginia Conversations and like us. Today, we've heard from Democrat Terry McAuliffe and Republican Ken Cuccinelli in their race for governor. Now, the Libertarian candidate, Robert Sarvis. He joins us by phone. Welcome to Virginia Conversations.
Thank you for having me.
Robert, currently there is no Libertarian congressman, no Libertarian senator, no Libertarian governor. So it would appear you're not running to win the race for governor in Virginia. What is your intent here?
No, we're running to win. The problems that we have at the federal and state levels are because we don't have more Libertarian-leaning members of Congress and the state legislatures. Part of the problem is that we have people who don't believe in the rule of law, who don't believe in protecting both economic freedom and personal liberty. And that's why we have a lot of voters who are gaining interest in my candidacy. My poll numbers keep going up. We're now in double digits. and that's because the Democratic and Republican candidates exemplify exactly what's wrong with their respective parties. And that's why we're focusing on a very inclusive message. I believe in putting forward a vision of Virginia that's open-minded and open for business.
Can you expand on that?
Sure. If you were listening, if your listeners heard both McAuliffe and Cuccinelli talk, they talk in very vague generalities when it comes to economics. I don't think either of them really understands economics. I'm the only person with an economics background. I'm also the only person with a technology sector background. I think I'm the only person who actually knows how to have public policy that will jumpstart job creation in a manner that's fair to small businesses, entrepreneurs, innovators, large companies, et cetera. So I think it's very important to have a economic policy that is very rational and creates an equal playing field for all. But also on personal liberty issues, I'm the only person, for example, McAuliffe says he's in favor of recognizing same-sex marriages, but he's already said he's not going to push for it. He's not going to do anything because he's already admitted defeat. I disagree. I think that we can make moves on this. I'm the only person pushing for it. I'm the only person in this race whose marriage was once illegal in this state.
An interracial marriage.
That's right. Yeah, 50 years ago, the definition of marriage in Virginia was a man and a woman of different races, of the same race, excuse me. And, you know, we had to have a Supreme Court decision that struck that down. I think we should do this in a, using a democratic process. And I think the Republicans are seeing the writing on the wall, and you know, young people are very much in favor of, if we're going to have government involvement in marriage, making it equally available to same-sex couples.
Did you feel that McAuliffe answered the question around DOMA and marriage equality sufficiently?
Absolutely not. I mean, he's said many times that he's not going to push for it because he's admitted defeat before even trying to make a fight for it. And I've gone around the state into very conservative areas, and I don't change what I say based on the audience. I press people on the issue and explain to them my position, and I found that many voters who are leaning towards Cuccinelli don't even know that interracial marriages were once illegal in Virginia. And, you know, as Santayana said, those who are ignorant of history are condemned to repeat it. And I think that, you know, elections are about accountability. And so when you see so much corporate money determining what laws get passed and getting special treatment in our tax code, our regulatory code, you know, elections are the times where we push back against both the Republicans and the Democrats. And you have to be principled in the way you vote this election.
Your libertarian lens brings a different view on gun rights than even Republicans. Explain.
Well, that's right. I have the strongest record in terms of support for gun rights and the Second Amendment. The VCDL rated me as very pro-gun. I'm the only person who got that rating. And I just think it's a matter of individual liberty, and we should not be burdening law-abiding gun owners in order to pursue something that gun control laws don't actually result in, which is decreases in gun violence. And so what I've said is that if we want to actually solve the problem, the first thing we should do is look at our drug laws, because our drug laws create very well-armed, very well-funded criminal enterprises that are very violent. And so, you know, the reform of the drug laws touches on so many other issues as well, the breakdown of black communities and black families, and the racial disparities, a huge amount of spending on incarceration and enforcement. And so there are so many ways in which, you know, we can reduce the strain on our budgets. We can put people back to work, not criminalize them and make them unemployable. So there are a lot of things that I'm talking about that no one, neither Cuccinelli or McAuliffe are talking about.
You and I will have the opportunity to talk about drug reform, transportation, health care, and other issues. We're recording a more in-depth interview with Robert Sarvis later today, and we'll have that on a future edition of Virginia Conversations. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
See you later. I also want to introduce a panel of political pundits. Joining us from the studios of WVTF in Roanoke is Mike Sluss, who is on the editorial board of the Roanoke Times. And in our Richmond studio, Jeff Shapiro, political reporter and columnist for the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Thanks for having me.
I bet you didn't know you made up a panel. the two of you?
Sounds more like walking the plank, May Lily.
It does.
Yeah, and I think I would be Jeff Shapiro's straight man in this scenario, but I'll do my best.
Let's start off, Jeff, with your reaction to specifically the McAuliffe interview and the Cuccinelli interview.
Well, clearly, the candidates had an opportunity to discuss in greater detail their ideas and concerns about a variety of issues, whether it was Medicaid, whether it was education, whether it was transportation, public safety, for example. I think a lot of people might find it unusual that Ken Cuccinelli, a Republican, has his concerns about the no parole policy and the consequences for the budget. Terry McAuliffe talking for a rollback or elimination of those standardized tests, those very controversial standardized tests that school children are taking. That said, consider the backdrop against which this discussion is taking place. Public opinion polls consistently show that Virginia voters are underwhelmed by their choices for governor, that they see these major party nominees as tarnished, as diminished. And I think as a result, the candidates themselves are the issues. I think they recognize this, and this speaks to the tone, this increasingly hostile tone to the campaign.
Mike Sluss.
Well, with Cuccinelli, I was struck by his response to your first question, an open-ended question about his record in the Attorney General's office. And he talks about exonerating the wrongfully convicted. He talks about human trafficking and mental health. No mention of his very high-profile battles with the Obama administration over health care and over EPA regulations that he considers destructive to the state's economy. These are fights that have won him a very loyal following in his base and also have enraged his opponents on the other side. It suggests to me that he is trying to sort of soften his rougher edges here to appeal to voters in the middle as we get closer to Election Day. With McAuliffe, I was struck by his closing remarks, acknowledging that he's going to need a strong turnout. You know, in 2009, only 40% of the state's eligible voters went to the polls, and Bob McDonnell won in a landslide. That was a year after 75% of voters went to the polls. Obama carried Virginia for the first time, the first Democrat since 1964 to win Virginia. So I think McAuliffe recognizes the historical challenge that that he has in front of him.
Beverly from Orange, good morning to you.
Good morning.
You have a comment about McAuliffe.
Yes, I read in the paper a while back that he has a major interest in a car company, and that the manufacturing plant is in Mississippi. And I was just wondering why he didn't open that plant in Virginia. There's parts of Virginia that could really use those jobs.
That's a question that has been brought up by his opponent. Thanks for that comment, Jeff.
Terry McAuliffe said on a number of occasions that he had hoped to build his green tech electric car company factory in Virginia, and it was quite clear that there were a number of, shall we say, dances going on with the governors of other states, most notably Mississippi. Haley Barbour, who had been Terry McAuliffe's counterpart at one point, chairman of the Republican National Committee. The state of Mississippi came through with some very generous subsidies, and that pretty much drove the decision. And this is a touchy issue for Terry McAuliffe. It was clear that in floating Virginia as a possible venue for his plant, that he was trying to do much as Mark Warner did when Mark Warner stood for governor in 2001. Use capitalism, if you will, I suspect critics would call it crony capitalism, to attract supporters. Nonetheless, McAuliffe still talks about possibly setting up some type of a satellite operation here in Virginia. I think that's probably more of a talking point than a reality. But it is clearly a subject about which he is very sensitive. And the Republicans have a chance to really needle him on it by emphasizing this investigation by the Securities and Exchange Commission of green tech, specifically how the company has used a federal program under which foreign investors are given visas so they can live in this country in return for big dollar investments that generate substantial numbers of jobs.
Mike, if you want to chime in on that, you can. Otherwise, I have another question for you.
I'll go right ahead.
Okay. On the matter of gifts, Attorney General Cuccinelli was talking about how he really pressed McDonald to be more aggressive with addressing ethics issues. On the other side of that coin, he didn't return monies. That is, he was saying, you know, these are gifts that don't have a monetary they weren't financial gifts, but they do have a monetary value attached to them, and he chose not to return the equivalent of those funds. So I'm hearing conflicting things. Can you help sort that out?
Well, first of all, and it speaks to the really the toothless nature of Virginia's ethics laws, that there's nothing illegal about the gifts that Cuccinelli accepted from Johnny Williams. Where he ran into trouble was he was sloppy about disclosing some of them. So the gifts themselves, there's nothing illegal about it. I guess from that standpoint, you can make the case that why should I return something that it wasn't illegal for me to take. But I think the issue is that that Johnny Williams is a figure at the center of this investigation of the governor, and therefore it would be proper to reimburse him for these gifts, which included things like a Thanksgiving weekend at Smith Mountain Lake, an airplane trip, and the $6,000 in food supplements that he referred to.
And in fairness, we should say that an independent Democratic counsel did clear him.
That's right.
P.S., and I'm sure Mike remembers this, it wasn't too long ago that Ken Cuccinelli, in effect, said he doesn't have the money to reimburse Mr. Williams. The Attorney General is the father of seven. You know, he needs his job. He needs his job for the paycheck and for the benefits, among them a fairly generous health care program.
Could the two of you take us past the whole transportation package? We saw on the surface that McDonald had a transportation package which Cuccinelli did not support. Was it really about the policy? And was it, as he said, quote, I thought it was bad policy? Or was there a political reason behind this?
The Tea Party, the ascendant Tea Party influence within the Republican Party has only strengthened the anti-tax resolve of the Republican Party. Clearly, Ken Cuccinelli is playing to his base. To kind of move this issue forward, there are a number of weak links in this transportation package that was approved by the General Assembly, signed by Bob McDonald, in violation of his No New Taxes pledge. It was passed with the support of Democrats, more Democrats than Republicans. But there are elements of it that are very much in jeopardy. The reliance on tolling, for example, there have been some hostile court decisions on that. The federal government is dragging its feet on the application of sales taxes to internet purchases. That is also a big element of this McDonald initiative. If those two are in doubt, if you will, eliminated altogether by political inaction or a hostile judiciary, the General Assembly and the next governor could be back at work on transportation finance again very soon.
Mike Sless, we heard from Libertarian candidate Robert Sarvis. What is your take on his role in this race?
Well, it's traditionally very hard for an independent or third-party candidate to break through, and I don't think it's going to be much different for Mr. Sarvis. Recall in 2005 that Russ Potts, who was a Republican state senator and well-known, bolted the party and ran as an independent, got a fair amount of media coverage for an independent candidate, and ended up with 2% of the vote. So it's an uphill slog, certainly. And one thing I guess he does benefit from, which Jeff pointed out a few minutes ago, are the high negatives that both of these major party candidates are saddled with. And maybe we do have a larger number of voters than normal looking for an alternative.
And another advantage Russ Potts had is that he was a longtime lawmaker.
Yeah, absolutely.
And still only 2%. Any final words in our 30 seconds?
If there is a very, very light turnout and it is a very close race, Mr. Sarvis's candidacy may prove decisive.
That's Jeff Shapiro of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Also joining us, Mike Sluss of the Roanoke Times. A pleasure to have both of you with us. This reminder that past editions of Virginia Conversations can be heard at virginiapublicradio.org. To find out about upcoming topics and comment on past shows on Facebook, search for Virginia Conversations and like us. Today we've heard from Democrat Terry McAuliffe and Republican Ken Cuccinelli, as well as Libertarian candidate Robert Sarvis. We want to thank all these gentlemen for appearing on the show today. I want to thank you as well for your question, and we appreciate any feedback that we get from you either online or by telephone. That's it for this edition of Virginia Conversations. I'm May Lily Lee. Have a great week.
Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org. And by listeners of this Virginia Public Radio member station. Listeners can hear this program again or access other Virginia Public Radio news content at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.